Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we help you create a better life through complete connection to yourself, to others, and the world around you. And part of that is connecting to your money. So today we're recording live on Wisdom. If you get the Wisdom app in the store, check the show notes, you can link right to it. Follow me on the Wisdom app and you can chat live with me anytime. And it's really incredibly cool. Everybody gets a 15-minute timer to talk about whatever you want to talk about. I always have a topic that I suggest, and today I'm suggesting money and relationships, but we can solve those challenges or we can solve others. So let's get going talking about your challenges. So money in relationships. And I often get the question, what the heck is a guru doing talking about money? Money is an instrument. It's an extension of ourselves. If you show me how you're using your money right now, I can tell you what stage of your development you're in. I can tell you the kinds of challenges that you're probably facing. I'm not, disclaimer, I'm not a financial advisor. I am not a wealth manager, but I am someone who has been through quite a lot of schooling and learning in the school of life when it comes to money. I wrote the book Validation, Sabotage, and Freedom, all about the nature and effect of money. And that's what I want to talk about, the nature and effect of money on your relationships today. Not just your relationship with yourself, but your relationship with other people. And it's really kind of fascinating the effect that money can have in our society and on relationships with other people. And that can go from anything like anger and violence and murder and to manipulation or extortion and control and oppression. It can be about forcing attachments in the way that, you know, all kinds of different ways. And we can talk about that. Even to something as simple as social pressure to spend when you're out with your friends. And all the way to the positive side of how relationships can be affected with it. And I want to throw out what might be a little bit of a controversial opinion. I don't know. You'll have to tell me. But other than the spousal relationship, you and your spouse, you and your committed partner, other than that, I have not found any relationship that can be pure when money is involved. And that includes parents and children, friends, employers. And what do I mean by that? Pure. I mean, honest, really 100% open. Let me give you some examples. When you go to work, you probably don't show 100% of all the beautiful facets of your being, your reality, right? You're going to filter that down a little bit. You're going to show a few parts of your truth, right? You're not going to necessarily talk to your boss about everything that's going on in your world. One is just in our society, just sort of not appropriate. But two, there are parts of yourself that you probably hold back at work that you don't choose to show. And, you know, the lawyer doesn't always show up as the weekend biker in the courtroom. And so for good reason. So that's an important thing to kind of set the foundation here. Whenever there's money involved in a relationship, whether it's between you and your employer, you and your parents, you and your children, anything other than that spouse relationship. That's the only one I found that can really withstand the effect. You're not going to get their whole story and they're not going to get your full story. But the nature and effect of money on relationships, it's funny, other than the spousal relationship, I found it to be a very negative influence on relationships between parents and children, family members, friends. And We make it work in terms of your work relationships with your employers, because there's a very structured set of societal rules around that, right? You go to work, you do the job, you get paid. And that, and that serves so many purposes. But it's more the kind of the family relationships where this gets really, really hard. And it can get all kinds of difficult. So I want to help solve your challenges in that realm today. If you have other challenges that you've been waiting for me to be live to talk about, we can talk about those too. Click the Join Me, Be a Guest button. My guest seat is open and waiting for you. So click the button, come on in. Let's talk about how money is affecting your relationships and what we can do about it. So we have our first guest joining us now here on Wisdom. Welcome, Dr. Robert Goodman.
Thank you. Relationship, the money in relationships. Well, I in the beginning, how it affected me was not having it and seeing other people's have it and know and wanting to do what it takes to get it, but not necessarily the right thing. So I had to make a decision about what it is that I was going to do and who I am and what I was going to be for myself, not for no one else. So, yeah, so I mean, yes, and I do teach on relationships, family relationships, my alternative lifestyle coach. And so I just approach people of having them right the way they are, and then we can talk about it. Like you were saying, you're not going to reveal everything to your boss about you and vice versa. Even to your kids, your attitude could be very negative towards your kids, and they're going to respect that. They're not going to upset you, because even a hello dad will upset you. Well, that's not being honest to yourself or what it is that you want, and how you want your family to be. So do you want your family to be afraid of you? No, I don't think so. Yeah. So and there is a lot of it going on like that. So it's like having, so having money, doesn't really mean that your relationship with someone going to be pleasurable.
And in fact, those extremes, and I wonder if you've seen this in when you counsel people, that when you end up in the extremes of it, not enough, or what people may feel is not enough money, or what people feel is a lot of money, can both bring up problems in that power dynamic in the relationship.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's like a being in a relationship, with someone, you got to like come to some kind of agreement. Yes, I mean, a lot of people say compromise, but it's not really compromising. It's joining each other,
Oh, what a beautiful way to put that. Joining each other. And that's that spousal relationship. I have seen money actually bring spouses closer together when they do that, when they join each other, as you said, and get on the same page, and they're kind of, in it together, and maybe they're paying off debt or just getting their finances in order, or maybe they're, building wealth or whatever it is. It almost doesn't matter. But when they're in it together and they join each other, what a beautiful phrase. It's magic.
Right, hey, when you get married, hey, you become one.
Yes.
And so everything is like of all the chasing women's and flirting with men's, you know, it's out. You found your significant other. No. So, I mean, it's like, hey, you pull together and do what it's going to take for you guys to succeed. No, not what someone else say.
Yeah. Wow. And that, yeah. And that's, yeah, a couple of good points, right? And then when couples do pull together like that, it strengthens the relationship when they pull together around their mutual success, as you were speaking of, but that also sort of shutting out what society says is, oh, you should want these things, or this is what success looks like, that you as an individual or a couple can go, well, no, not for me. That's not what it looks like for me.
Exactly. No. So, I mean, this year's statement I wrote like 20 years ago. Listen.
A relationship isn't all about two people being together. It is also about being an individual and strengthening a relationship with yourself. In fact, having a good relationship with yourself is the primary ingredient to have a successful relationship with others.
That is so true. It's and I'll bet you see this a lot when you counsel people as well. I had a friend of mine say it so beautifully the other day, that you're not going to see a change in your external world until you change something in your internal world.
I'm clapping.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
And I'm like, well, there it is. And it doesn't even matter the change you want outside of yourself. You have to work on you. You have to work on that change of inside. So cool. So what do you find are kind of the most common challenges when you counsel people in terms of money and relationships? Are there certain themes that kind of pop out more than others?
They doubt about each other.
Oh.
Yes, because they go, well, he said this and she said that, you know, and she don't move her shoes out of the doorway, you know, and so it builds up, you know, next thing you know, just a small thing will set each other off, you know, even though you might be saying hello to each other, but it's the way you looked at each other, you know, a quick hello. A snappy hello. No, it's like it brings back up the negative, you know, and miserable, I can't even have to say the word. I said the other day is that the monster in you, in the monster love company. Mm. So, I mean, it's like it can come. It's out there, like Satan, he's out there. So every chance you get to be angry, he's going to encourage that, influence you in doing that, you know, to stay angry, mean, mad, you know. Mm-hmm. And then what you're doing is like, why am I always so mad? You know? What is it that I'm not hearing? I must not be hearing something. No, I married this woman because I was in love with her. I liked it, this woman. You know, we had a family together. No. So what changed? Lack of communication.
Yes. Yes. And it usually, I found that it tends to start with somebody's holding something back. Something that they're not saying, something they're not expressing. And then sometimes it can take all kinds of complications, right? But you're right, that call it the monster, call it Satan, call it Mara, call it, there is this force that wants to pull people apart and pull them down and pull them into doubt and all of these things, and we have to kind of go, oh, I see what's happening here. No, I'm not going to succumb to that. I am going to look at my partner lovingly. I'm going to greet them lovingly. I'm going to trust in their humanity. And you mentioned about doubting each other. I see this with couples sometimes. They get married and now we're supposed to be one, right? And I say, oh, okay. And have you combined your finances? And they go, oh, no, we're not going to do that, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that's, are y'all a couple or what?
Right.
No.
Right, right. Around. Are we spouses or roommates?
Hey, really? No.
But it's tough. And if you ask them why have they not combined their finances? It's that there's this essential distrust. Somebody will say, oh, well, yeah, they're not good with money. Or they don't agree on how money should be spent. So they therefore don't trust each other to combine the money. And so it all comes down to trust and fear that kind of have to be worked through, you know. And I'm a big fan of Dave Ramsey. I like his processes are nice and simple and easy to follow. They're simple. They're not always easy. My husband and I are incredibly upfront with each other about everything, and just with a radical level of honesty and love and compassion. It even took us about 3 months to work through what I'll call our budget baggage, our money baggage from previous relationships and life itself, in order to actually really be on the same page. It's not necessarily an easy journey.
Right. Yeah. Like this statement I got on my website is,
welcome to About Gratification Family and Couple Counseling and Courses, where you can learn, unlearn, and relearn your relationships.
And people don't think because they are all of a sudden in a relationship, they're not really thinking about the relationship that they already have, which is their self.
Yes.
And like you said, oh, why ain't we putting our money together? Why don't y'all put y'all money together? No, he ain't good with money. I don't really trust her. She every time I give her money, she want more money, you know, but I love her. Well, it's something going on there. No, mistrust, miscommunication. No, if you don't, if you're not willing to relearn your relationship, because you in a couple relationship, then it's going to stay the same. You're always going to miss.
You're right.
Yeah,
and you used an important word there in your statement, which was unlearn. You know, the ability to when you're talking about money in your relationship, and you know, these feelings come up, this fear, and it starts to look like anger or mistrust, the ability to step back, because and say, wait, what's happening here? I feel right, and don't point at the other person, right? Go deeply internal and go, I feel afraid. Okay, where did this come from? Oh, well, maybe something in a past relationship, maybe something when you were growing up. You know, why do I feel this way about money? Why do I think that way or have these beliefs about money? Why do I have, and examine yourself in front of that other person, right? So they can go, huh.
Exactly. Yeah. You create a viewpoint because of your culture, parents, peers, your teachers, so then when you get out there, you don't have to really relearn who you are, go, because you now are dealing with the world out there by yourself to succeed into a career, whatever it is that you're going to do, and you want a companion.
That's right. Yeah. A partner, a real partner.
That's right.
And when couples connect like that as a real partnership and with that decision to to just spiral each other up in success and support and love. It's amazing. Two people become so much more than just two people.
Just two people. That's right.
Yeah.
And like over the years, I done heard, see a couple elder people and look there. They've been together so long, you know, they together for companionship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they was together for companionship from the beginning.
Yes. Yes. And so we've got like about another 30 seconds. What would be your number one best advice for people who find that money triggers issues in their relationship?
Think about who you are and what it is that you want out of life.
There it is. It always comes back to you, doesn't it? It always comes back to you.
Always come back to you. Hey,
yes.
You exist only because you exist. As long as someone else and you don't exist, then you don't exist. Not to them.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And that was the end of our time. Thank you so much, Doctor. That was enlightening. And there's so many facets to this money in relationships. And let's see who else wants to join me in the guest seat today. Click the button and join me. Let's talk about your experiences with money in all kinds of relationships. And the spousal relationship, which we were talking about there with the good doctor, is such a major thing in people's lives. And I'm really amazed by how much spouses may not even know about each other's money and the situation. And so I'm going to look up a number here. And there's also issues in terms of your children and your money, right? And getting them independent. But so many aspects, we could probably go on all day about money and different types of relationships. But when I was researching for the book, Validation, Sabotage, and Freedom, which I wrote about the nature and effect of money on yourself and on relationships and on the world at large. Money is the number one root cause of murder and anger and violence. Everything from, you know, manipulation in relationships, you know, like if you want a relationship with me, you're going to have to be sending me money. And if I can't get money out of you, then I won't have a relationship with you. Or sometimes I've had students come in where somebody was nice to them until they did give them money. And then they kind of turned ugly. Of course, there's always good old extortion, pay up or else. All kinds of things. And you'd be shocked that this can come from your own family, from your own friends, and all kinds of, there's so much interesting complexity. And let's get Dr. Robert back in here for a little bit more chat about these issues.
Hi.
Welcome back.
thank you. What you was just saying, I just have to play this here out.
Greed on stinginess. Greed is caused by scarcity of money, but belief in the abundance of money causes generosity. Meanness is caused by scarcity of kindness, but belief in the abundance of kindness causes us to behave kindly. When a person chooses scarcity over abundance or chooses to believe in scarcity rather than abundance, he is sure to lead a poor, limited life.
What do you think about that one?
Yeah, you're right. It's true. And I noticed this and it gets back to examining your own beliefs about it, right? So if you have that scarcity mindset, scarcity of money, scarcity of kindness, that was interesting. That's an interesting one. I mean, let me look into that for just a second, Dr. Robert. If you feel there's a scarcity of kindness in the world, are you less likely to be kind? Huh. And I think it's if you feel there's a scarcity or lack of kindness in the world, that means you have a belief inside you that is something like people are generally mean, or the world is generally kind of a mean, ugly place. And that can cause you to act in a meaner, uglier way. That is interesting. And yet, if you take the opposite worldview and you say that, people are basically good, and that humanity is basically good and kind, you're much, and I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And so it's the same with our beliefs about the entire world as it is with our beliefs about money, right? If you have this belief in your head that money is hard to come by, then so it will be. If you have a belief in your head that abundance is everywhere, then so it will be. And you'll reflect that in your entire, existence. It's funny, people talk about, affirmations and changing their beliefs. And it's something that I advocate, or kind of reprogramming your own brain, because if you can examine the beliefs you picked up as a child, you would be shocked at some of the beliefs you picked up, and whether people meant to implant you with these beliefs or not. We can pick up some pretty goofy stuff as children.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, because in the beginning, the elders is always playing with you, joking around, and so if that's all they're going to do with you, then that's what you're going to learn. Mm-hmm. And then when you do get out there and start doing stuff, you're going to be doing the same thing. Joking around and stuff, and people's not going to take you serious.
Yeah, that's true. And you can pick up all kinds of little, subliminal messages that get kind of stuck in your subconscious. When I was young, you'd watch your parents, you watch them, you mm-hmm. watch everything they do. You watch their relationship with themselves, with others. You watch how they handle money, and you think, oh, that's what you do. This is the right way, right? And so I picked up like goofy beliefs as a child, like, well, you should be successful, but not too successful. You should be happy, but not too happy. Mm-hmm. You should have money, but not too much. and when I step back and look at that and went, I disagree. I disagree. I think I should be ridiculously happy. I think I should flow in abundance so that I can give in abundance. And I had to completely unlearn and relearn, sets of beliefs.
Exactly. And that is creating your space where what you can have. And then once your surplus start to overflow and you feel like you can give, then that's what you do. But you don't give your surplus to the point that it's hurting you.
Right. Right. And you've got to figure out where to set that boundary.
Exactly.
So there's a good subject. And this is tough because everybody sets that boundary in a little bit different place. And I work with a lot of mothers who need to set that boundary out a little further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it self-imposed limitation.
Yes. Yes, because we just do it to ourselves.
Exactly.
And the thought, oh my gosh, the guilt that sometimes students will feel when they finally do decide to set that boundary, to say, mm-hmm. I've got to fill my bucket first, and then I have something to give. And that concept is mm-hmm. it's not something we teach people from when they're young. It kind of depends on who you grew up with. I certainly didn't get that. it was mother as martyr, wife as martyr, sacrifice everything. And then wonder why you're burned out and depressed. And it takes a lot though to examine yourself, to get to that point that you can be willingly to look honestly at yourself. So there's a question. There's a question for you, Dr. Robert. How do you, so when someone first comes going, you know, I think I need some kind of help, and I think you can help. And your point being to them, you've got to look at you. How do you get them to turn that corner and actually start looking honestly in the mirror?
I have a game program or exercise that I do with people, you know, and I sit across from them, and it called withholds. And I ask them, tell me something you would tell from your significant other. And whatever they say, I turn around and say, thank you. I never ask why they said that. And I just maintain that for maybe 10 questions. And then I do the other person. And then I bring them back together and I have them talk to each other with me in the room, which what it does, it reduces the charge that what it is that you are trying to say to a person without saying a foul word.
So. Right, that facilitated conversation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's he created a withhold because when she walks in from work, she pulls off her shoes at the front door, and when he come in, he steps on her. So instead of him asking her to move her shoes or maybe even get a little shoe rack and place her shoes in it, so the next time she put off her shoe, she'll put them in the shoe rack herself, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was pleasurable for him and her, you know. He was thinking about her, you know, and that's what she was wanting.
Ah, yeah. And so that's a great example of turning that around, right? Exactly. Because in the beginning, his upsetness at the fact that she left her shoes in front of the door really had nothing to do with the shoes.
Right.
It had everything to do with, is she not thinking about me? Doesn't she love me? Am I not important enough? Wanting to be top of mind in your love's mind. And so he turned that, or so turning that around, it seems so simple. I'm going to buy a shoe rack and put her shoes in the rack. And again, it's got nothing to do with the shoes. It has everything to do with, I'm going to act in a loving way towards her. And then she, right? And what's the response? She acts in a loving way towards him. And it's never about the shoes. The shoes are just a medium here.
That's why I said learn, unlearn, and relearn your relationship. Because right there, he relearned his relationship with his wife and pleasure her all at the same time and himself.
Yeah, right. And what works for both.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's funny. And that simple thing of, if they can solve an issue about shoes at the door, then they've just learned how to operate as a couple on much bigger issues. Bigger, much more challenging stuff. Right. So it's all these little issues we see in our relationship are just a playground for us to learn how to be together, and how to operate together. I've found that often in a relationship, one person cares a lot more about whatever that issue is than the other person, right? One of them has a beef with, a major problem with something, and the other one is like doesn't too much care about it. So one method I've seen is deferring to whoever cares the most about it. And kind of going with their solution.
Right. And like you said, you don't care about me no more. And you start thinking of all kinds of negative stuff, and it doesn't take much to do that.
And so, right.
Yeah, like I said, the monster love company.
Yeah, yeah, boy, it does. And it just feeds off of that. And it's funny how we see that concept in so many different cultures. And every time you see the same concept pop up in basically every religion, every culture, every set of storytelling, you know there's truth to it. Every culture, every religion, every society has this concept of some darkness that wants to be fed, that feeds off your fear and your anger and your upsetness, and wants to pull you apart and pull you down and stop you from that self-understanding and that deeply connected love and all these beautiful abundance that life has to offer. And they all do, right? They all call it something different. There's the story of the two wolves, right? Love and fear, and which one are you going to feed? But boy, it's like that. And sometimes it really gets a grip on us. But it's the number one thing that I try to teach people, especially in the relationships, and this works for spousal relationships, children, relationship with your children, with your parents, with your friends, is just the ability to step back and examine yourself.
Exactly.
And be like, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling this? You know, and it's funny when you do that in front of another person, you're teaching them how to do it too. They go, oh, whoa, you know, look what you just did. You just examined yourself.
Yeah, you just gave me a point of reality, you know, what really is happening when I do something like that, you know, and I just get frustrated, you know. But if I do it the way that you suggested to someone else, and I just happen to overhear that, then, oh, it's going to make my life better, but I don't necessarily have to acknowledge that person that I heard it from, because it could be talking to somebody else. No, but could be on the bus, you know, and hear the conversation setting two seats in front of you, you know.
Yes. No,
that's a good idea. That's a point of reality of what I do, you know. That's my fear, you know. And so I want to do something about that. I want to prove over myself, my body, love myself more. You know, not doubt of someone else of doing or saying something or doing something. You stay out of them areas where what is not going to benefit you.
No. Right, right. Well, you make such a great point there about how we affect everyone around us, even if we're just in public and we don't even realize that they're listening or watching. So Dr. Robert, if you could have just one effect in our last 30 seconds, one effect on everyone around you, what effect do you want to have?
I'm gonna play it.
Fear and approval. Some people refuse to admit their jealousy, even to themselves. Focus on your body, approve of your body, and love yourself more. Many people have some fear and apprehension about sex and their sexual performance.
Yes.
Wow, I don't know if we could end it on a better point than that. Thank you, Dr. Robert. It's true that the effect of loving yourself. And so let's talk about this, and my guest seat is open. Let's see who else wants to talk about money and relationships. We've got so many cool people out there listening. Welcome, everyone. This is a topic, I did write a whole book on it. You can check it out, Validation, Sabotage, and Freedom, about the nature and effect of money. And there's all kinds of sort of interesting stuff. So let's see, in 2017, the New York Post reported that a little under half of couples fight about money, a little under 50%, but that 60% of couples actually did not like their partner's spending habits. And so this is what I find interesting about that. So do the math on that. 50% would say they fight about it, which is to say they discuss it in a very ineffective way. But 60% actually feel that they don't like how their partner handles money, which means that there's 10% of couples that are upset about it, but they're not even talking about it. Yikes. Just harboring the upsetness about it. And there are, you know, money is such a charged topic. We come with these huge beliefs around it. It's just money is an extension of ourselves. It's not inherently good, inherently bad. It's just a thing. It's like saying, oh, the table over there is inherently good or bad. No, it's what you do with it. You could do evil things with it. You could do good things with it. You could use it for oppression or control. I'm talking about the money, not the table. You can use it for good, and for giving and support. It can be anything. And so it comes into our relationships in such strong ways, your relationships with your spouses, your relationship with your parents, relationship with your children. And I've seen this go sideways in so many ways. And it all comes down to you, which is what Dr. Robert was saying. It really comes down to you and how you feel. I'll give you some examples. So I have taken questions from people who are still supporting their adult children in various ways. They might be fully supporting their adult children, or they might be just paying their cell phone bill or paying their car insurance or some piece of it. But when you really dig for why, especially when that child would be perfectly capable of supporting themselves, because they're not a child anymore, they're a grown adult, why they continue to do that, it usually comes down to some form of attachment. They have an attachment. They worry that if they're not contributing financially to supporting that grown child, that grown child won't want anything to do with them, right? It comes down to unworthiness. Oh, if I'm not sending them money, they, you know, I'm so not worth talking to, they won't want to talk to me anymore. But there's something really beautiful. So let's talk about money in your relationship with your children for a moment. And this can go in all kinds of ways too, but learning when to cut that off and how to cut that off, right? How to bring them into financial independence in that sense of their first financial independence, so they are dependent only on themselves and their work, and they have some kind of, you know, income and stuff like that, and how to kind of wean them off of your bank accounts and get them onto their own. And so before we jump into that, I want to talk about why you would want to do that. Why? And people give all kinds of excuses, but as to why not, right? Oh, well, I would just want to, you know, shouldn't, instead of giving them an inheritance, I just want to give them money now. And so I can watch them and enjoy doing whatever with it. Yes, but to what detriment, right? What is the effect on that young adult or not so young adult when you continue to fund them, right? And the problem is that they don't grow up to the extent, they don't mature in their psychological development as far as they should. But let me tell you what happens when you actually finally break the financial chain between you and your grown child. And this right here should be all the motivation you need. That relationship between you and your grown child turns into the most incredible, deeply connected relationship that you can imagine. Now, I feel your fear. It can go the other way as well. If your grown child is going through a phase of, if you're not sending me money, I don't want a relationship with you. And I would say, okay. That doesn't, still cut it off anyway. Cut it off anyway. Because if that's, they have to go through that phase and figure out and learn and deal with their karma around money. But typically what happens for the large majority is that they're a little unstable for a little while. They're finding their financial feet, and if you wean them off of your money slowly enough and carefully enough, then they're quite stable. And they get to a point where they're paying their own bills and they're paying their own rent, and they're completely capable, imagine that, completely capable of getting along in this world by themselves. And when they see that they can do that, because believe me, when you're young, it's not obvious. You don't necessarily think to yourself, oh, I'm capable of existing in this world and paying my bills and doing what I need to do. They have to see that for themselves by actually going and doing it. And so when your grown children are out there on their own financially without any money from you, and I mean not $1, not one. You don't get to count it as done until there is not $1 flowing between the two of you. When that independence is achieved, they grow up, and not out of hardship, but out of the recognition that they are capable. They think to themselves, oh my God, I'm doing this. I'm adulting. Look at me, I'm fabulous. And you look at them and go, oh my God, you're doing it. You're adulting. Look at you. And you look at them and you go, what magnificent grown adults they have turned into. And now that there's no money involved in the relationship between you and your grown child, it can be pure. That is, it can be 100% truthful. You can be your 100% truthful self, because they're grown now. They're grown now, right? And you know what I'm talking about. When they were little, there are parts of your reality you may not have shared. You can share that now. They can share their full reality because they're not dependent on you for money. So you end up with this beautiful space where you can share your truth with each other. And that creates such deep connection that even as close as you may have felt to them when they were small, you are even closer now that they are grown, independent adults who don't need you for anything, physically anyway. They still need you for love and compassion and advice sometimes, right? You become more of a coach, more of someone that they can call for advice on whatever, whenever. And man, it is just the best. It is the absolute best. And yes, you know, sometimes if it goes badly, or if they are kind of in a selfish phase, if they're stuck in stage 3, and you can go to my website at katherinecolleen.com and learn about the stages that I talk about sometimes. If they get stuck in their development and they don't ever get to stage 4, which is other people have needs too, then yeah, they can become someone who doesn't want to talk to you if you're not giving them money. And if that is the case, and I do work with students who are in that position, they say, oh, but they won't talk to me if I don't give them money, or the only reason they call is for money, and if I don't give them money, they're going to stop talking to me. Then I would say that's a gift that you should take them up on. Because they're assuming that their presence in your life is some perfect wonderfulness that you just can't live without. But in reality, if they're going to be that way, maybe you're better off having a little break from them, right? There's a toxicity there. And yes, it might be in your own child, and maybe a little break is okay, and that's all right. And so we're gonna get Dr. Robert back in here to chat about children now. And it's complex, but hey, Dr. Robert.
Hi. Yes. The point of anyone taking responsibility for their own life, yeah, you know, is totally up to them. When you're with your parents and you're in their house, and you know, you get to a certain age, you know, you're gonna start doing chores for a certain amount of money? Are they going to give you allowance because you got an A in school? You know, little things like that. But you get a car, you know, and a girlfriend, and you know, and you running out every day, you know, and when you come in, you need $10 for mom or dad, you know, and not working. Well, yes, they're going to look at you like, then I'll teach you better than that. So taking responsibility for who you are and what you want is, you know, about life, you know. And actually,
yeah.
I wrote it, I think, a little bit clearer than I'm saying that.
Responsibility, we describe emotions and how people interpret emotions as positive or negative depending on how much responsibility they feel they've taken for the development of these emotions in our life choices, both of which play significant roles
in our lives.
Right, right. Yeah, and you have to choose that for yourself.
Say it again?
You have to choose that for yourself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, otherwise your parents might have to encourage
you into it.
Right, yeah, like... don't let the doorknob hit you on the way out.
Right, right. Well, it's funny, you know, and
we raised a bunch of kids, and
some of them, although they knew this, we were upfront with all of them about this is the process. You know, at this age, you will take over these bills for yourself. You know, at this age, you know, if you want a car, you can buy it for yourself. If you,
right.
you know, you can be on your own insurance. And then when you're 18, you can take over your cell phone bill or whatever. And one, you know, little step towards independence. And everybody knew this was the plan. Everybody knew. And still some of them took it better than others, and others resisted incredibly. Some were just sort of independent souls to begin with. And were mm-hmm. like, you know, yeah, you know. I'm on my own. I can, you know, I can do this. And even, I mean, it doesn't mean it wasn't a little bit scary for them, but they saw step by step that they could. And others were much more resistant, you know. And it was funny, even though they were all raised the same way and all
under the same what I'll call financial independence plan. Just
based on their personality, they all just approached
very differently. And some would get really angry at it, and some would rejoice in it. It was funny. It was very individual.
Yes, like my great niece, when the pandemic hit, you know, she wanted to go out and work, you know, she's in the 12th grade, you know, and but it was just like so many people was being laid off, you know, and wasn't no jobs out there, you know, and they had to go to homeschool, but they had laptops from the schools, and they can only use it during school time, you know. And so a lot of her homework she couldn't get to, you know, without going to the library, you know. And that was sort of out, you know, and especially in Arkansas, you know. So I bought her a computer, a desktop, you know, and she just ended up getting a little job on the, doing something that she's going towards a career as, you know, and she actually wanted to be, what's that, CSI?
Oh.
Yeah, she wanted to be there and cut open the peepers and diagnose, you know, and be a crime detective, you know. And
like, wow.
Yeah, she really going for it, you know. So, I mean, yeah. And she, you know, impressed me, so I encouraged her to do just that, you know. So,
yeah. Well, and that brings up an important point that sometimes we give financially to others, or things like, you know, a pricey gift like a laptop or something to others, for good reason. And sometimes it's just enabling, right? And knowing the difference, whether you're really supporting someone or whether you're enabling negative behavior, that's an important difference.
Yeah.
Because there you supported her, right? And as a result, that gift turned into something that could open a whole set of possibilities for her, a career, everything. But for other people, you know, if you're just giving them cash and they're just, you know, blowing it at the bar or, you know, on stupid stuff or whatever that isn't forwarding themselves, you know, then your gift is actually detrimental.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she was talking to her mom and grandma about when her friends end up pregnant by a boyfriend, you know, and he didn't want to admit it, and, you know, all the negative stuff, you know, and
yeah.
Her grandmother said, well, I hope you don't do nothing like that. And she said, and mess up my relationship with Uncle James. I'm not going to do that.
Right. No.
And so, when they said that, tears came to my eyes. I said, wow, she valued me that much. No. She said, mess up my relationship with Uncle James. I'm not going to do that. No.
Yeah. It always does come down to those relationships and some of those, you know, those relationships that, whether it's family or your religious leaders or just a good friend or a teacher who provides that
mentorship to help you
kind of stay on a good path. It's so important. And talk about combining the two biggest issues in all of our lives, money and relationships today. there's just about nothing bigger in
our whole lives. But
it's interesting, and that takes us down a road of the good that can be done with the abundance that we may have in our lives. The good that can be done as we support each other and family and things that as we can, and yet being so careful that we're not enabling negative behavior. Right? It's a fine line.
Yes, positive reinforcement.
Yes. Yes, and that can look like a lot of things too, right? It can even look like just encouragement and kind words, compassionate discussion.
Excuse me. Exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah. That can kind of look like a lot of things. I heard a fascinating statistic that was about 5% of married couples, one of them has a life insurance policy on the other one that they don't know about.
And I know that's a bit of a sideways thing, but it's a stat that I've been fascinated with that I kind of like wanted to bring up. That so for 1 out of 20 couples,
the other one has a life insurance policy on their spouse that the spouse does not know about.
Exactly. And yeah. I guess that because of my age, 1 out of 20 is 1 from 20 with me. Because I can name 20 people that does just that.
Really? Oh my gosh. But it's
so funny. And
so I'll have one more question for you, Dr. Roberts. I got this
question in the other day, and this was kind of an interesting one.
So a couple and trying to get on the same
page about money, wanting to get on the same page about money.
Now she would rather pay off debt. And get out of debt, pay off, you know, credit cards and car loans and things. He would rather save. Just save, save, save. And so anytime they get a chunk of money in, he wants to save it. She wants to use it to pay down debt. What's the right way to get those two on the right on the same page, whichever page that is, get them on the same page, what would you counsel them?
Well, I would give them an ultimatum. What's more important to them is what I would say to them. Now let them think about that. No. What's more important? You keeping a roof over your head, or you giving the bank your money? Because if something end up happening to you, and you can only get only want to get the money out, you know, she just lost that money.
Right.
So you have to think about what's important: your relationship with your wife, or you saving for some unknown vacation that you want to take, and you're only thinking of yourself.
That's a good point. So it's digging down into why, right? Why is that the route you want to take? Why pay off debt versus why save, and save for what, and why save for that, and versus why pay down the debt, and you know, and that kind of whole thing. And it's a, yeah, digging down, right? Because it's always what's below the surface that solves the problem.
Yeah, sticking with the basics.
Yeah. why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. You want to take a secret vacation by yourself? Why? Why are you saving the money? You know? When you know that you have to keep a roof over your head if that's what you want to do, but then again, maybe they're not on the same page, and you know, they definitely not on the same page if she want to pay off the bills to keep a roof over her head, and he want to save the money for some unknown reason.
Right. Or is it that he wants to save the money because he doesn't feel safe, that he would feel safe if he had a certain amount of, say, like an emergency savings, is it an issue of safety? Whereas she doesn't feel safe because there's this debt that makes her feel unsafe.
Right? That's right.
Yeah, it could be, you know, what would make you feel safe to have a bit of savings or to pay down the debt? And maybe there's a happy medium between the two. We save some and we pay off debt some. But that critical thing of everybody being on that same page and really being able to explore in a conversation with each other, why? What's important? Why is it important? What could we do without getting emotional, without getting angry, without getting frustrated, that's the trick. Of course, that's just the trick in marriage, though, isn't it, Dr. Robert? Just to be able to have those unemotional conversations.
Yes. Men produce, women absorb.
I wonder if it goes a little bit the other way, too.
Both women these days go and they absorb, produce too. But yeah. Once you married, the husband's supposed to be the producer, and give the wife, what y'all need to live. But yes, these days a man and wife goes out and work. No, you have to.
It's tough. It's tough too, right? So if one of you is the producer, and I'm so sorry, I've got to get running here in a minute. If one of you is producing, the other has a responsibility to be the good steward of it. All right, so I've got to run today, but I will be back on soon enough. Give me a follow here on Wisdom so you know when I go live and we can chat. Thank you for joining me today. And until next time, I'll be wishing you Purna Asati, complete.